WKMOX. Happy Tuesday to you. So I'm very, very excited. We have Hall of Fame tied in from the Big Red. Jackie Smith in studio. I ran into Jackie over the break at Billy G's. I'm not a big go up to celebrities kind of guy, but I'm like, that's Jackie friggin' Smith. I'm going to say hello to him. And just couldn't have been nicer. Broke my damn hand when he shook my hand.
Come on.
I'm not even kidding. That's the first thing I told my family. When we walked off, I'm like, I think he broke my hand.
Yeah, I joke about it. Jackie, I don't think guys like you realize that you got giant hammer hands. Because, like, Ted Hendricks used to do that to me all the time, too. Just give me the big old like that. You guys are different.
I don't notice that, but people have told me, but I just can't stop doing what I'm doing. I don't know. I'm sorry, but if I heard anybody.
No, it's a great story.
The only one that didn't win was Rach. So this is a big deal for me because I'm a local kid, grew up over on the East Side. I'm 61 years old, so the Big Red were my wheelhouse. And you and Terry Metcalf and Otis Anderson and just what... I know that you guys weren't, you know, the best in the NFL, but to a kid from South Roxana, what an exciting, fun team to watch all those years.
It was fun. And looking back on it and looking at the games that are played now and some of the games that were played afterwards, it was a great time. I mean, but the thing that was unique about, especially about that offensive line, is that they were almost like a team of their own. They had Hanifin was their coach and pulled them together, and so they were like brothers. They were just like, and so they, and so I felt kind of awkward, but even as a tight end, just to say I was part of the line for a while, because they had a club there that they were going, they were together, they were sticking together. They aggravated each other, cursed each other, you know. Coached each other, you know, so it was an interesting arrangement for the team at that time to see that type of thing. But anyway, but we had a great team at the time, and we had some great coaches and Hanifin and Curiel and all that was at the time.
And we were just talking about Mr. Deardorff. He was on with Kevin about a month ago for the 100th anniversary, and as I was saying, I put football. That guy could have been a surgeon. That guy could have been the president. He's just one of the most talented human beings I've ever known.
Yeah, he certainly is. He's very talented and a very good conversationalist and a funny guy and all the things that you're saying. And so we all know that. We all know him, knew him as that type of a person.
Yeah.
And he still is that type of person.
Yeah.
So, but it was great to play with people like that, because he can always lend some levity to the deal and some logic to the procedure too.
Yeah.
And he pulled a lot of the guys together. He really was. He did.
You know who my guy was Dobler. What was he just the ultimate? You love him when he's on your team. You hate him if he's on the other side.
Well, you know, interesting thing about Conrad is he when he first came on the team, he got released from the team, and then the guy that had replaced him that made the team, he got hurt, and then they had to call Dobler back. You know, and so when he came back, man, he was determined. You know,
wouldn't leave him again.
Get it all, yeah. So he was right in with everything, doing everything he could, and he would be doing everything he could to make a block or to aggravate somebody or to get the upper hand or whatever. And so I admired him for that. You know, but he aggravated me a few times, and so we had an understanding after a while.
So
we both understood each other, and we both were about half nuts at the time. So, but anyway, he was great. All those guys on the offensive line at the time had unique personalities, and they were individuals that pulled together and did a great job.
So football preceded you by a long time, but you were one of the few guys, in my estimation, Wheels, I'm sure you'll agree, who really invented the modern position of tight end. Did you realize it at the time that you were doing that, or you're just out there doing your best?
I had no idea what was going on. At the time, we didn't. I had no idea. I knew that the fact that I could run helped a little bit, and uh, And so, and the fact that I was a little, I was strong enough to do some blocking, but I was just trying to take advantage of what, of some, what little ability I had and be able to do some things. And so consequently, it finally dawned, I guess, on the team that, I mean, the quarterback, that the tight end's the closest guy to you, you know, to throw the ball if you're going to give, you know, as far as the receivers are concerned. And so I think that that would be the main thing. If, you know, if you could get away from the linebacker and then get downfield, that'd be a they would be a good a target. But yeah, that the whole thing for a tight end at that particular time, for me anyway, was trying to get away from the linebacker to get downfield, because the linebacker was supposed to keep the tight end from getting downfield because of the fact that he was the closest to that, to the quarterback, and could just lob the ball over to him. But and so my whole, a lot of my work and working that I did before and after practice was trying to get away from the tight. So I'd have these guys, the linebackers, line up after practice or whatever, and I'd try to get around and keep them getting their hands on me and pushing me and getting me off balance and off with the stride. So that was a lot of work went into doing that. And so I think that because I had that ability to do that and worked on that, because out of necessity, if I wanted to ever play, then I'd be able to get out, and then it had some speed, and we had patterns that were a little bit different at the time. A lot of man for man coverage at the time, for the most part, and so if you could get out and allow, so if you could get out away from the linebacker, get downfield, and get a position on the tight safety, You had a chance. And so consequently, we had a pattern that really accounted for a lot of the yards that I made, because I was able to get, is because it was just new. Because you get out and you run down at the tight safety, and if he turned one way, you went the other, you know, right by him, just fly, you know, just it was called a post corner, you know, and that's what
like an option play.
Just as an option, so just throw the ball. So just get that. And so a lot of the yardage that I got, I think I acquired a lot of a yardage just because of that.
Yeah,
you know. And so anyway, I came along at a time when the league was trying to adjust in some aspects of it when it comes to the defense. Yeah. So I was really pretty lucky to be.
So the quarterbacks and the receivers are far more protected these days than you guys were, which I think is a good thing. I don't want to see anyone get hurt. But you know, you guys are playing against Jack Tatum and Gary Fincic, and kind of just they could hit you any way they wanted to hit you.
That's exactly right. They did. They didn't. Well, anybody can. They can do that anyway. You know, nobody can do that. Anybody can hit you that way. But the whole deal was it is to be able to, whenever you got a chance, to be the hit R instead of the hit E. And so if you had a chance to run into them or to block them or to hit them or to get the ball and try to run, then you wanted to be the. Yeah. You wanted to. We wanted to make them a little bit apprehensive about taking you on or trying to hurt you or whatever, yeah, because they knew that you may want to get them back. You know?
Yeah.
That sounds like trying to be a buddy or trying to be a tough guy. So, yeah. But it's not. It's protection.
So you guys were the specimens of your day, and it's not that many years since you played, but you look at these monsters today, right? Yeah. I mean...
Oh, the offensive and defensive linemen?
Oh, my Lord.
I was looking at them yesterday, and I said, how can they even run like that? And they're you're right, they're big. They all can move. They pull out and they move, and they move downfield, and they
move like old school tight ends.
I know,
right? But they weigh 400 pounds. It's just nuts. You know, I kept jumping,
you know,
man.
I mean, I look back at some of the players that when I played that they didn't have that type of agility and movement at all, you know, and they didn't have that weight. None of those guys had that weight, you know, like Tom Banks and those guys, they didn't have any weight at all. And so they were, they did it out of pure strength and and maneuvering and to the having a good ability to block correctly.
Yeah.
Jackie, who was the guy in your time that you did not want to see across from you? Was there a guy that could keep up with you, a linebacker that can keep up with you, a safety that was a little bit too much of a headhunter?
No, nobody a headhunter, but the guys that I a lot in Dallas I'm trying to make the guys middle linebacker, the outside linebacker. He and I still talk, and every now and then he'll call. I can't remember. We got to be buddies, you know, for the most mm-hmm. part, because a lot of the guys that I identified with that were defensive guys were guys that were just like me. They enjoyed the game. They wanted to get the most out of the game. And so when you go into a guy like that, if you beat on the pass man or whatever, you know, that's nice. And they don't get upset about it or anything else. They're kind of glad you did it, you know. But then at the same time, I'm glad they got me. But it was it's hard to explain that type of relationship, but it's a respectful one for sure both of them. And so I got to know a lot of the guys like that. There was a couple of guys that would try to hurt you, and so we had our meetings about that. Mm-hmm. But for the most part. All those guys that I played against, they were very good guys. But I couldn't remember anybody being real, real
okay.
tough to do.
Was it Hollywood that was your guy that you Hollywood Henderson?
Henderson? Well, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think of the guys I can remember from that time, and he's the one that stands out.
You guys are just tuning in. We're talking to Jackie Smith, Hall of Fame member of the Big Red. You still singing?
When there are no guns in the crowd, yeah.
Is this from childhood, or just at some point you realized you could sing?
Oh, well, we I used to sing in the choir all the time, and then I decided to try to do it somewhere else. But that doesn't mean I can sing. It means that people will let me sing. And so
you have the balls to sing.
But I've enjoyed it over the years, and for the most part, it's been fun to do, because I do with the things from the Guns and Hoses and all that, you know, and Danny Boy and all that stuff. So it's an honor to be able to ask to do that. You know?
Did you get more nervous playing or more nervous singing?
Oh, neither one.
Oh, good for you.
Neither one, really, because it's an exciting thing to do. I mean, it's just, you know, I think about both of them equally, I think, but I don't know. I don't get real bent out of shape that much. But I really want to make sure that I'm thinking about the things I should be thinking about in both times, in both situations. You know, that I instead of just going out there and just letting things fly, but you got to put some thought into a little bit of it. So that's all.
Well, on behalf of my audience who are my age, thank you for your years. We loved watching you. It's been a big deal for me. So nice to meet you. I'm going to tell everyone we're friends. So just so you know, if you hear that you're friends with Dave Glover, just cover me.
That's just, well, I can't tell you what a pleasure it is to be able to be asked to do it.
Thank you.
And to meet with you guys, but I listen to you all the time anyway, and so but it's great to be here. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you, pal.
Thank you.
All right, Jackie Smith.
Nowhere land, making all his nowhere plans for nobody.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 222. That was so awesome. That was so cool. I can't believe that Jackie Smith knows my name. Much less being a fan of the show.
Isn't that great?
Like, he listens all the time.
Yeah.
You guys hugged several times.
We hugged. I haven't hugged my family that much.
I really related when you said that he hurt your hand when he shook your hand.
Right?
He hurt my hand when he shook
your hand.
Yeah.
That's so weird, because I hurt his hand.
Yeah, I know. Rach made him buckle, man.
I saw him do that joke, and I was like,
Those football guys, like, they... I, I really honestly think that most of them don't realize it because, you know, you think about it, you spend a lot of your life, you live amongst other football players. You all have that giant hammer grip.
Yeah.
And then you get to, like, some of us normies and they're like,
my hand, I always have fun when you're
disappeared inside your hand, sir.
I always have fun. And it's the same way with, like, basketball, baseball players. They're just generally, like, larger people, athletes are. So, like, watching them, you know, on the field going, you know, over by the coaches or whatever, and they're just totally dwarfing the coaching staff and the field staff.
Boy, you guys weren't joking about looking at guys, you know, like the way that the NFL players look like now compared to previous. It's like, think about it, like even like the 85 Bears, like one of the greatest defenses of all time, and that's 40 years ago, so it's a while ago.
That's crazy, but that it's 40 years
ago,
by the way.
I know, but it was like the big deal that the refrigerator was 300 pounds. Like, people were like, this is unheard of. This man is 300 pounds off. Literally everybody on a line is 300 pounds.
Nuts.
I mean, there are 280-pound linebackers. I'm sorry, not linebackers, tight ends.
Yeah.
You know, like, crazy.
Running like 4.740s.
It's amazing.
That's why we didn't make it.
Yeah, exactly. That's my excuse. That's my story.
Although, I will say, when I was playing football, not that I would have made it, but that Edelman position, you know, the
slot receiver,
it just kind of didn't exist.
And then not the way it is now.
Yeah,
no,
then it became a thing, and you got all these 5'7", muscly, you know, fast white guys out there making a living in football.
Man, there's the guys that play in the slot too. Those guys are the ones that are tough.
Yeah,
because you know you're looking at a lot of contact.
Yeah,
tight ends too, though, man. Those guys, they're gonna have. Sometimes they get singled up on a pass rusher, and they got to block the guy. Sometimes you're trying to run, and you're either trying to outrun a smaller defensive back who's faster than you, or get away from the bigger guy, the linebacker, who's maybe a little more physical than you, but not as fast. It's always a really interesting thing to watch the matchups play out.
When I was hanging out with Bulger all the time and I would go to practice, that was amazing. You've done it a million times, but I had not. Just being 10 feet away from these guys. But you know who impressed me the most by far were the defensive backs. To see them run backwards faster than I could run forwards. and like, you're going against a guy, a wide receiver, tight end, who's just as fast, but he knows where he's going,
yeah,
and you don't. It's just, what a nutty position to play.
Yeah, the guys that always have blown me away are the defensive ends. Because those guys will be 6'4", 6'5", 275, and they run like a running back.
I always thought, I used to, you know, me in my fantasy life, I would think if I could be great at any position in sports, I think defensive end would be a lot of fun. To just be one of the best of all time. And just because in high school, we had a guy, Dean Hollis, who was about 6'6", probably 230, and he just manhandled everyone. And I used to just watch it and marvel. Like, what must that feel like? Just to own everyone on the field. Pretty cool.
Don't know, man. All I know is, if you know, I would pick quarterback because they get bigger paychecks.
Sure.
And they don't have to run into a giant person every snap. Whereas if you're on the line, you will be running into a giant person every snap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, you're also a giant person, so I guess it's a little less worried.
I'm just going to go.
You guys wrap it up?
I'm just going to wrap
it up.
Like
the days of victory.
I'm going to try and catch Jackie and give him another hug.
Give him a ride in the Jeep.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah,
man.
There you go. Fun. Let's go. I'm going to go clubbing with Jackie Smith.
There you go.
Can happen.
I haven't been clubbing in 30 years, but damn it, we're going.
What club are you guys hitting?
He seems the type.
I'm thinking Applebee's.
Oh, you know? All right.
They got a happy hour.
Sister had to come in and
ruin everything.
Damn life.
Attorney Brad Young is with us. Hello, Brad.
Hey, Dave.
Brad, we just had Hall of Fame tight end Jackie Smith on. What do you think of that?
Thank you very much. It's kind of an Elvis thing when you're doing Jackie Smith. It's an Elvis with a Louisiana twang.
Little Cajun.
Little Cajun. Wish I could do it, but Jackie Smith, what a legend.
Yeah, so great, so great. Okay, so lots to talk about. As I understand it,
West Virginia is going before the Supreme Court, or has, I'm not sure the timing, because they have a ban on biologically born boys playing in girls' sports. The ACLU sued them, saying that it's a violation of Title IX. I think West Virginia is saying, no, we're standing on Title IX. Just walk me through the whole thing. Give me your opinions.
Yeah, it's both Idaho and West Virginia in this case. They were consolidated. Oral arguments were heard today. I listened periodically, and I was watching updates. This is why I love these kinds of issues, because this quintessentially pits different rights against each other. So you've got Title IX, which is designed to protect women, and yet you also have the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment that says you cannot treat people differently. And so the argument is that transgender women or transgender men are being treated differently. So this was all argued in front of the court. There was a lot of really wonkish legal issues here that I won't dive into. But essentially what it's going to come down to, I think, is this. That is that the argument is that if a transgender boy or a transgender girl, I think the court's going to find that they're not being prohibited from participation in sports. They're being prohibited from participation in sports in the type of league that they want to participate in. So it doesn't ban them from sports. It bans them from being able to choose, I want to be on the girls' team or I want to be on the boys' team. And so when you apply Title IX's protection of women, I do think the court's going to come down in their classic 6-3 version on this by saying that there's no discrimination here because the kids are still allowed to participate in sports.
And if you were a justice, which way do you think you'd go on this?
Boy, that's a tough one. I would probably come down on the side of the conservative court simply because constitutionally, even though the courts have found that that people have a right to protection based upon their sex, there's very little. In fact, there's only one case out there. It's a labor law case that says that people have constitutional protections based upon their gender decision. So I think the stronger argument is that if states want to do this, there's not a constitutional prohibition against them doing it.
So let me just talk for a second, non-legally. Here's kind of how I feel about it. And Wheels, I want you to jump in after me. Socially, I'm pretty liberal, as you guys have picked up. So when it comes to people being, gay, trans, whatever, couldn't care less. I accept people for what they tell me that they are. You tell me that you identify as a man or a woman or fluid or whatever it is. I'm your friend. I'm your ally. I got your back. I will treat you with respect. However, when it comes to this, maybe because sports was such a big deal to me, I'm not a fan of it. I just don't think that an athlete, and I think the jury's still out on this scientifically, maybe I'm wrong, but I think that an athlete who may have physical advantages over their opponents, biological males playing against biological females. I'm just not a fan of that, in spite of how much I support the community. Wheels?
I think this is I feel the same exact way. We should be. I wish people were more respectful of human beings involved in the conversation when having this conversation, mm-hmm. instead of being nasty to people. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the onus on this is on the people making a claim. And the claim being made is that there is no advantage for the person who transitioned from male to female to play female sports. If that is the position you're taking, you need to provide the evidence that proves that. So the science that says this is not an advantage. If there is science that's agreed upon by people in the community that says, hey, there's no advantage here. All right, now we can have the conversation, but I think it's on the person making the claim or the people making a claim to prove their case in advance of being allowed to compete. And I don't think that's unfair.
Yeah, that was actually one of the topics. In fact, Justice Kagan got into some of this debate about the science. And even the proponents, even the challengers to these laws were upfront stating that the science is still not there. that the argument is that a biologically born male who identifies as a female who's on hormone blockers doesn't have the hormonal advantage. And but there's still this big gap in the science about whether there is an advantage due to bone density,
yes,
muscle and tendon depth and size.
Yep.
And so there's all of these other issues that go beyond just the hormonal puberty blockers. And there's just no science on any of this.
Yeah, I think that's where and again, I'm definitely not a science expert, but being in sports, this has been a topic of conversation for a long time. And one of the main questions is whether or not a person transitioned before or after puberty. Because if you're transitioning afterward, you're still getting the benefits of being taller, longer limbs, which is an advantage. That's an advantage for swimmers, which is why the Leah Thomas case got so much attention in collegiate swimming. And it's not to say that there aren't tall women. There are, but you have an advantage, as you're pointing out, with muscle density. And there are, I understand that there are hormone blockers that can level that, but it doesn't change that you grew to be 6'3" when you probably wouldn't have if you had not gone through puberty as a male. And again, none of this should be about anger or hate or, you know, looking at someone like they're trying to game the system. That's not the point.
Yeah, I don't even think it should be about politics.
No, this should simply be about what the science says and is there an advantage. And in almost every example that we've seen, there is an advantage. Leah Thomas is an example. As a male swimmer, was not highly ranked. As a female swimmer, all of a sudden is very highly ranked and is competing on a national level. And I think that's the concern, is fairness. In sports, mm-hmm. we are very concerned about fairness. And if someone has an unfair, it's one of the reasons we don't allow people to take steroids and other performance enhancing exactly. drugs, because it's not fair to people who aren't willing to risk their health. And this is not the same as that. It's just it's about that fundamental fairness. And if there is a time when the science agrees that there's no advantage, then it's a much more easy conversation to have. But we're not there right now.
Rach, your thoughts?
I completely agree with Wheels in regards to I think there's a kind way to speak about this and there's a nasty way to speak about this. And unfortunately, a lot of times it wades into the nasty territory with a lot of the people who are the most vocal about keeping trans women out of women's sports. I am very interested in the science behind it. I also do have to ask myself, well, why do women's sports exist in the first place? Mm-hmm. Like, why did we create a whole other subset of sports for women? I think that's something to chew on and to mm-hmm. consider.
Brad, as I understand it, Minnesota and Illinois have filed suit against the federal government, saying that the ICE agents that have been brought into their states has been an invasion. I'll be honest with you. I don't know the first thing about this. I don't know what the legal precedent is or mm-hmm. the rules are for ICE to go into a state, for federal agents to go into a state. So enlighten us if you can.
Well, ICE can essentially go wherever there is evidence that there are illegal immigrants. Now, constitutionally, some of our constitutional rights are less valid, so to speak, at the border, because the idea is that when you're coming across the border, you're voluntarily coming into the country, so you sacrifice some of your rights for the purpose of search and seizure. That's usually the best example. But we're talking about here in Minnesota, southern Minnesota, northern Illinois, not close to a border. And so the question becomes, what can ICE do? And Minnesota and Illinois have filed suit. Now, the real basis of their lawsuit is they're making the argument that under the 10th Amendment, that the states have the right to control their own cities, police their own streets, enforce their own laws, and that by ICE coming in, they're infringing upon that. They're also arguing what's called an anti-commandeering. Missouri dealt with this a few years ago. Anti-commandeering is that the federal government cannot force state law enforcement to enforce federal laws. We saw this in California years ago when they said, we're not going to enforce federal drug laws. We're not going to enforce federal immigration laws. And the courts have said, yeah, the states don't have to enforce federal law. And so Minnesota and Illinois are arguing that in essence, ICE is forcing us to do this because they come in, it's a big deal, and we have to assign police officers. I really don't see any of these arguments from Minnesota and Illinois carrying the day with the courts. The Supremacy Clause says the federal courts get, or the federal government gets to enforce its own laws. That's what they're doing here. There might be some temporary restraining orders about place and manner restrictions, like you can't go into schools or you can't go into hospitals. But by and large, I don't see this this lawsuit by Minnesota and Illinois as being effective.
Brad, seeing all the different angles to the shooting in Minnesota, I have my idea of what happened. We all do. None of us know what was in the lady's head. None of us know what was in the ICE agent's head, but we all think we do. I do. You do. But I can't imagine there's going to be a prosecution in this case. Can you?
No, there won't be a prosecution at all. And again, I think as we talked about last week, when it comes to that, just the 30-second summary there, the whole question, even though I think that the driver's intent was to turn the wheels away from the ICE officers and get away, her intent is irrelevant to the issue of civil liability or criminal liability. The only issue is it reasonable for the police officer to believe that his life was in danger? That's what the courts are going to look at. That's what they're going to focus on. And the courts will almost always defer to the police or the law enforcement, unless there's something what's called, something extreme that would say you shouldn't have done that. And I haven't seen anything in the video that would make the courts reach that decision.
All right, pal. Great as always. We appreciate it. Thank you, Brad.
My pleasure.
We have a new term.
Oh.
Chopplganger.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Does that mean you're doppelganger, but you look worse than them?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, I love that word, but that is brutal, man. That's tough.
That's tough.
Because I know I'm a chopper.
I thought this was the generation that's supposed to be nice and not insulting people.
No,
and
dude,
being aware of everyone's feelings.
Where did you get that idea from?
I don't know. They're always whining on social media about my personal space.
Wheels, they are so mean to us millennials.
Like, are they?
They're bullying us constantly.
And you guys should smack them down, man. Life.
Yes.
That's because you guys take it. Backhand them.
Ugh.
Be like Gen X, man.
They're
you don't take so that crap.
Mean. They're so mean.
Aren't we all a Chopplganger?
I mean, to someone.
Yeah, if you have a celebrity lookalike, you're probably the Chopplganger. Like, it's very unlikely that you're better looking than the celebrity.
I used to be a Chopplganger for Bruce Willis. And now I'm a Chopplganger for Jim Gaffigan.
No, you're not. You're not pale enough.
You're not pale enough,
he
man.
You guys don't look alike at all.
You have to be as pale as me.
He would be the Chopplganger.
When I saw me on Rennie's podcast, I'm like, that's Jim Gaffigan.
Yeah. I'm the Chopplganger for the anger guy from Inside Out. Or maybe the Heat Miser. The Heat Miser probably.
He's your chopper.
I don't know, man. I think
that was very funny. I don't know why.
You're chopper gator.
I'm chopper, by the way.
Y'all got to start being meaner to those Gen Zs if they're harassing you, man.
They're so mean. They're like, you have the millennial smile.
Yeah, what are we supposed to do, Kevin? They have all the power.
What power? They're brats.
They're mean. It hurts our feelings.
See, that's what you got to get with your Gen Xs, and we'll teach you a thing or two.
They call us Unk.
Yeah.
And also Chopped.
Yep.
I have been feeling Unk.
Quite Chopped and Unk myself.
I am definitely Unk. I've been feeling every second of 35.
You know what I've been regretting? Misty, who is our IT lady here, who I like a lot. We all love Misty. She fixes our problems. Sent out an email and said, hey, Ladue High School is having a career day, and they would love someone from radio to represent. And I guess I was the only one. And I said, I'll do it. You know, I've always liked doing, you know, career days and stuff like that. And then I thought about it. And the last one I did, I was probably 55, which is old to a high school kid, but not 61 old. Right? Like, I feel like there's going to be like, how are you standing? Much less doing radio.
It is amazing.
Were you
when you're
the first radio person? Is that why you're here?
It's amazing in high school how distorted you are when it comes to age and time. Like, I remember legitimately thinking that my teachers were old as dirt, and they were probably 38. No, now seeing, like, you see them now, and you're like, oh, they're not that much. Oh my God, they were only in their 30s. I thought they were ancient.
When I was 19, I was working at a department store, and my manager was 24. Not a big age gap, but she, at that age, she was hitting on me and flirting with me. And at some point I said, like, ma'am.
Ma'am?
Yeah, like, she just seemed so old to me. And then when I was 26 and I was a first year attorney, the partners at the firm I worked at were like 45, 46. Mm-hmm. But to me, they were just, they weren't ancient. I knew the difference between 45 and 85, but they were just like, you're nothing like me.
No, you're like, those are the grown-ups.
Yes.
And I'm still not. That's how I was early in radio. All the guys around me were probably 40. And I was like, oh, my God, these guys are old people with kids. And I'm like 26 years old, 25 years old. And then you're like, huh, yeah, maybe that wasn't the right take.
I never felt the grown-up thing. Maybe because I've had this career and it's allowed me to be kind of Peter Pan and
gotcha.
Do a radio show and play in bands and play baseball at 61 and stuff like that. But I, as I've been saying, I've definitely gained wisdom in the past few years, definitely evolved. I think I'm a better version of myself than I've ever been, probably because my old version wasn't very good. But I never felt that, oh, I am now a grown-up, even though I have grown-up responsibilities.
Yeah, but to them, you look that way.
I guess.
It's not about what you are. It's about how the high school age ones would see you. Because, you know, like I talk about that with the kids I coach. I mean, I'm older than some of their parents. So I probably look old as crap to them.
Yeah, that is weird.
I'm chopped and unk. I'm chunk. Chunk. Everyone knows it.
That's what we go to shorten that for chopped unk.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, you guys are like, well, I'm a choppelganger to this fabulously beautiful movie star. I'm like, I'm the choppelganger to the guy who worked at Sbarro's part time at Union Station that I'd see in the parking lot all the time. Getting into his Nissan Altima.
Can I just throw my hat in the ring here? There's another layer to it when you're a lady, because you'll be talking to like a 25-year-old and they'll be like, wait, how old are you? And I'll be like, I'm 34. And they're like, oh.
I'm sorry for your loss.
I couldn't tell.
They just saw you get hit by a car.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, you know, I feel like you've had a good run.
I couldn't tell is really good. Yeah.
Speaking of age, I've never minded women older than me, and I have a new one. Julie Newmar, the Catwoman, is 92, and she looks good. She looks good.
She does.
92. I'm looking at her right now.
She's got on a bunch of makeup, which I know.
Well, look, I don't throw out the phrase too old for you very often, but 92 might be a little old for you.
But she's the Catwoman. Will you try and get her on the show?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, not for that, but
right. Our 61-year host is interested.
Have you ever heard of like Jim Gaffigan? Have you ever heard of a choppelganger?
He's very close with Jackie Smith. Oh, that's funny. So have you guys been seeing? Oh, is it time for break?
In 30 seconds.
No. Crap, I hate the 30 seconds thing.
You can tell me about the Gelman team in 30 seconds.
Okay, I'll tell you about the Gelman team.